Welcome to What's Left, a weekly political discussion challenging the mainstream left. I'm Eduardo Barca with Andy Lipson, and we welcome Andy back.
Yeah, we missed you. We missed last week's episode. It was a difficult week and a half. First off, my favorite traveling partner and walk-around buddy and just a great friend.
Loyal.
Well, just loving, I would say. Me and Brandy have a dog. His name is Naboo.
Brandy is your partner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he passed away this last week, very suddenly from cancer. So that was the beginning of a difficult week. And then pretty much right after Naboo passed, I was admitted into the hospital for what looks like complications due to a kind of a standard surgery to remove a mole. But during that surgery, it looks like my mole got infected. So I was diagnosed with the later stages of cellulitis, which is bacterial infection of the skin. And the wound itself was like deeply abscessed and infected. So I was, as I described to friends, I can't say I was at death's door, but I felt like I was in the hallway. But it looks like I got through it. You know, it's gonna be a long recovery road. Got this device over here.
You don't have to show it.
No? Should I? Should I not?
You shouldn't.
I should not?
I think we understand that you have a carrying device with you.
Yes. So this thing, so this is a negative pressure wound therapy device for when you get an incision and drainage, which basically means you have two holes in you. They had to put two holes in my back, one to clean the bacteria out and the other hole from which to drain it out of. So basically there's a cavern in my back that is now being healed, and I have to kind of carry this thing around. To slowly, instead of positive pressure that we often associate with wounds, this is negative pressure. It sucks. And it sucks out the blood, bacteria, anything hopefully that's bad that might lead to a spread of the infection. So it's a bit of a long road back, but and definitely some surprising events that I never anticipated. But I think I'm better now, or getting better. You know, and thank you for visiting during that surgery, because you came and stayed with Brandy and helped her kind of get through it, because she was very stressed.
And I almost thought we were going to have an episode in the hospital.
Yes. That would have been something. I think maybe we'd have gotten we could have gotten more subscribers that way.
I'm in the hospital headline.
Right, exactly. Clickbait. It's been a difficult week, but I'm glad to be recovering, and I'm super sad to lose Naboo. That was really hard to come back home.
Naboo, your dog, and Brandy's dog as well.
Yeah. You know, really, it was her dog, but I fell in love with him. He fell in love with me. Brandy is the queen of all, because it was the center of his universe, but he let me in close, I really had hoped for more years of life with him and with Brandy. Me and Brandy will have hopefully plenty more years, but we won't be going forward with Naboo, and you know, I don't really believe in an afterlife, but I still think that, you know, it's nice to think I'll see him later for a walk, you know. Yeah, so.
Well, thank you, and we hope you have a speedy recovery, Andy, and I really do hope that you do have lots of rest.
Yeah. No, it's I'm surprised how much better I feel already. I was feverish for a while, which is what happens when you get an infected wound. I thought I had the flu, but it was just an infected infection as a result of the surgery. I do feel a lot better. I haven't been at school for a week, but I'll be back next week. And students can complain about their grades and say, "Where were you? I'm getting a poor grade because you weren't here." I was like, "No, I'm not gonna play that." But yeah, I look forward to getting back there.
Yeah. And we miss our co-host Kenny Cepeda, who was not able to come tonight, but I'm sure he will join us probably next week. Thank you. Today we will be discussing the topic of the primary elections in Iowa, the Iowa caucuses, and the New Hampshire election results that were held on the 3rd of February and on Monday, on the 10th of February. I think we have lots to unpack there, since we will be talking about Bernie Sanders, the establishment, and maybe we'll get to if there's any rigging, or I mean, I think it's all in there. So we're going to discuss that. I am so happy that you are finally here and that you'll finally be able to discuss this, because originally we had planned to discuss this last week, but maybe this worked out because the New Hampshire results happened on Monday.
Yeah.
So let's get to it then. Did you want to say something first, or did you want me to sort of lay out the context?
Why don't you say what you want to say about it?
All right. Well, Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont won the New Hampshire primary a week after he won the popular vote in Iowa. As of Wednesday morning, with 89% of the precinct reporting, Sanders had 25.8% of the vote, narrowly beating former South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg, who is at 24.4%. And then there was Senator Amy Klobuchar that placed third with nearly 20% of the vote. Both Senator Elizabeth Warren and former Vice President Joe Biden received under 10% of the vote. And after seeing their support plummet in recent weeks and months. And then there was Tuesday night, Biden canceled his election night party in New Hampshire and headed straight to South Carolina because he had been defeated. And there's a primary that's going to happen on the 29th of February. So that's just sort of gives us some context. There was a lot of chaos, a lot of confusion last week for the caucuses, major delays in reporting the results. And former South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg has claimed victory with the largest delegate count of 14, which is followed closely by Senator Bernie Sanders, who received 12 delegates. He also received, I think, 14, but he won the
popular vote.
So
Sanders did.
Yeah, and Sanders' campaign has said that they will seek a partial re-canvass. I just think it's sort of futile, really, to do that. I mean, he can do that, but as we have seen in New York City, when he also tried to get 200,000 votes back, approximately, when they were not on the voter rolls, and mostly were Bernie Sanders supporters, and after so many elections, they finally proved that yes, there was fraud, and yes, they had canceled out about 200,000 votes, and that's just one example, right? And I mean, what happened? I mean, they just fired a bunch of people, and there was no real justice, and so this is more of the same in 2016, of more of the cheating scandal, I would say. Bernie Sanders, and I almost want to say poor Bernie Sanders, but I also feel, if I may now begin just how I feel about it, that he had this done in 2016, and now we are in 2020, and this is more of the same. And
from the jump.
Yes. So it just, like I said, I want to say poor Bernie Sanders, but I almost feel as if this is something he should already know that will happen from the Democratic establishment. And what sort of makes me even more now feeling a bit more, not upset, but more just feeling just like giving up on trying to follow, is that even there was an app that was used
from the Shadow
last week.
Shadow app.
Shadow app. And And this was reported, I had read it on Democracy Now!, but I also decided to look into other resources in case someone here decided to tell me.
Give me the Democracy Now! Straight scoop.
The Blaze, I also looked at The Blaze. So both The Blaze, which is normally a conservative-led news site, and Democracy Now! Reported that this app has ties to Democratic establishment folks.
Big time, big
like,
time.
Pete Buttigieg,
and Democratic National
Clinton machine.
Yes.
Yep. So anyhow, I'm just going to state those and then we can go into more details. I have a few details I'd like to delve into, but that's where I'll start. Please go ahead.
Yeah. That's a good kind of summary, I think, of where things are at. But to me, the story is was Iowa. It's interesting how it's initially even by its critics reported like, oh, it's chaos. It was very confusing. This was going this way. The app broke down, as if this was just an unfortunate accident. Like things had just kind of fallen apart. I don't believe that for a second. I believe this is like the bulk of what has happened is entirely part of a script by the Democratic National Convention to attempt to, you know, rein in what they think is their anti-establishment wing, the Sanders wing. And I agree with you that I think there's reason to be critical there. But for now, I'm going to talk about just the establishment itself. The establishment, I think, is trying to play catch up here in an election where Biden, the wheels fell off of his campaign like well earlier than they intended to. He collapsed in Iowa, has nowhere in New Hampshire, and if he recovers, it's going to maybe be in South Carolina. But they're now doing all sorts of things, trying to support Pete Buttigieg, talking about Amy Klobuchar, even trying to find ways for this billionaire Bloomberg to come in. What I want to say is that a lot of people who do believe this was a conspiracy. And I do believe this is a conspiracy. I do believe that the Democratic National Convention had its hands deep in the election in Iowa when they basically, when Pete Buttigieg and the DNC essentially communicate to the Des Moines Register, which has always historically reported their poll results just on that Monday, they basically spiked that whole thing because the poll results did not indicate a surging Buttigieg, but instead talked about Sanders being ahead, and they actually had Warren as second. And then, you know, you hear about Buttigieg's connections to Facebook and Zuckerberg when stories are coming out there that Buttigieg, there was vote flipping and things like that. Facebook is shutting those sites down that are saying that, calling it fake news. Buttigieg's connection to the shadow app, like you mentioned, but also, like you said, the entire Democratic National Committee has connections, particularly the Clinton administration, into that app. It's just all the different like accidents, like people who were head of caucus sites were basically reporting, wait, these numbers that are being reported by the DNC are completely wrong. The fact that the DNC waits till they get to this magic number of 62% to report the results, and then they start reporting others. All of it spells an attempt to kind of try to slow down Sanders, try to raise up Buttigieg, to kind of give themselves some time to recover from what looks like what they were concerned about, a runaway, which all their centrist candidates really just faltering and trying to keep, you know, Sanders in check. I just think it just shows the criminality of our electoral system, of the Democratic Party. And like we have spent the last three years talking about Russiagate. Liberals have driven themselves crazy thinking about Russia meddling in our elections and effing with the elections. When there is very little evidence of that, except for maybe Russia Times or some weird websites that are put up that are like memes and stuff like that. But here you have actual physical evidence of illegality and criminality and like cheating on the part of the Democratic National Convention, and all liberals can say is like, oh, look what happened, what a what a like not calling out that this is actually an act of the DNC, but acting like it's some sort of accident. Like, oh, who can tell what happened here? And it's shameful that people think on two separate ways, like, or think, are so hypocritical to call Russia out for something that never happened. And then when our own government, when our own people who are supposed to be running elections, you know, make this shit up and just come up with whatever process they want to use in order to gin things for themselves, people are mum about it because it's never Trump or anyone but Trump. I guess that's what I would say.
Yeah. Here on What's Left, we say, in the very beginning of the show, we say, welcome to What's Left, a weekly political discussion challenging the mainstream left. So I'm not interested in discussing right now the conservative parties, the Republicans. I'm going to tell our listeners, our followers, our audience, that they need to stop supporting the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party is now, I'm convinced, more so than before, that there is a hardcore old guard within the Democratic Party that is determined, very determined, to stop Sanders, even if that means a second term for Trump. And that's what everyone would think is the opposite. Everyone here, especially in San Francisco, would think this is a very liberal city, would say that Trump is the ultimate cause of the Democratic Party to bring down. But if you look at what happened in 2016, what is happening now, in the very beginning, the very first election here in the USA and Iowa, the very first, and already you can see the Democratic Party establishment maneuvering the election, trying to get cheeky about this and saying it was the app's fault, there was technical difficulties, the caucuses are complicated, la la la. It's all of these excuses. Yeah. The Democratic Party, I'm convinced, is intending to keep Trump and not Bernie Sanders. And I will criticize Bernie Sanders later. Yeah. But I will just say that it's so clear, I think, now that everyone doesn't, there is no, you know, it's just very, it's just no, it just, it's it, todo cuadra. It's everything is so matches now what the people were talking about in 2016, that I myself will admit that I did not believe, and I thought it was some fraudulent conspiracy that was out there that was trying to, because I was at that time a very big Bernie Sanders supporter, mm-hmm. and I just chose not to believe that the Democratic Party would, I mean, I knew things were happening, but I thought, no, it's still within, maybe there's a faction within, yes, but I'm now convinced that the entire Democratic establishment is out there trying to get Bernie Sanders. They really do want to get him out. They don't want him. It's not his candidate. This is not what they wanted. They cannot believe. And in New Hampshire, the youth vote rose in New Hampshire, and the caucuses as well. There were so many thousands and thousands. Bernie Sanders won the popular vote in Iowa, and there were so many people out in the caucuses that were leading, that were Bernie Sanders supporters, because they come out, they went out. I have to say, this is one thing maybe you and I may differ, but I do say that Bernie Sanders has the maximum people support amongst all of the Democratic candidates. Most of them have money, and Bernie Sanders has people power, and this is a populist candidate. So it just really shows that the Democratic Party is in cahoots with the Republican Party, because they are interested in each other to keep each other in business, to maintain the status quo, to maintain this establishment. And Bernie Sanders, it's debatable whether he is going to disrupt it. I will talk about that towards the end, yeah. I think. But is intending to, I quote here for our listeners, to disrupt the Democratic establishment. And that's why it's not going to work out for the Democratic establishment. I have more to say, but I want to see if you want to add to it before I go on.
I really agree with that. I mean, I think the other thing to add is at the same time while this whole nonsense was happening in Iowa, the Democratic Party was moving to get Blomberg into the debates.
Right, they changed the rules.
They changed the rules.
Basically. The DNC.
Right, they changed the rules. Normally you need a certain number of contributors. Not an amount of contribution, but a certain number of contributors before you can be in the debates. And they were like, well, we're not going to do that this time. And I don't know exactly what change they made, but they made it. They whatever change they made has now allowing Blomberg to be in the debates. So again, you see the establishment looking to, like, you know, do whatever it can to kind of slow down the Sanders train, put up opposition as best they can. Buttigieg, what's her name?
Amy Klobuchar.
Klobuchar.
Yeah.
And at the same time, recover from the fact that Warren and Biden seem to be in kind of, Biden certainly in free fall. And he was, but many of us, I certainly only 4 months ago was thinking, well, this is going to be Biden's. It's going to be the same
old,
same
as well.
You know, but it doesn't look that way. So they've got to find somebody else new. So that, I completely agree with you in terms of the cynicism that this exposes and the fact that there really isn't. This is the nature of our democracy. You actually sent me an email or text message saying, "Hey, can we find out about the Iowa caucus?" And I was like, "I don't think we need to. Like, look, there are some details I know about that, but the Iowa caucus has been going on since the '70s. Like, and it's, you know, every 4 years, it's been the first primary, and we haven't heard anything about this. Now suddenly everyone has to become an expert about the Iowa caucus to understand what's going on. That's not the case. The problem isn't the nature of the caucus. The problem is the nature of the Democratic Party, and really it fundamentally goes down to the nature of democracy under capitalism. We are seeing what true democracy looks like under capitalism, which means that the rich and the connected and the wealthy will scramble in whatever way they possibly can to make sure that they get what they need to in power. And I do think I'll go to a little bit. And Bernie does not represent a threat to that. One of the ways I feel like I know that is Bernie's not calling out the criminality that's going on here. He's kind of giving him a pass on this stuff. He's saying, oh, well, who can know? Maybe we'll get a recount. But he should be calling out the DNC as a criminal enterprise meant to stop him and people, you know? And he's not. And secondly, right after New Hampshire, one of the first things he comes out and says is, I'm going to support any candidate that comes out of this thing. You know, whether it's Buttigieg or Biden or Klobuchar or even Blomberg. He's essentially paying fealty to the apparatus, the Democratic National Convention, and their candidate, even before, like, he's even, you know, kind of started running. So he's already decided that that's the side he's going to be supporting. And to me, that you can't say you're fighting the establishment and then at the same time express fealty to the candidate that is produced by it. And you can't fight the actual capitalist class if you're not going to fight the Democratic National establishment. Because they are deeply embedded into U.S. capitalism. You can't fight Trump without fighting the DNC. That's the bottom line. So Sanders represents absolutely no meaningful threat. He's at best a problem for the Democratic Party, which has always basically sold itself on promising one thing and giving another and basically keeping its left wing intact. And right now the left wing is getting out of control. Largely because there's a rise of populism, a right-wing populism, left-wing populism in the country, in the world, and the same old methods of control, mind control that are used through the media, of obviously electoral control that are used, are just not working as well, and so they're becoming more apparent. At least that's my opinion on this.
Yeah, I agree. I think what I'm now focusing this episode on for are some of my friends that are beginning to listen to, because if they're tuning in, I hope that they hear this, because some of them ask me when I'm at a book club or if I'm in wherever we're at, we're hanging out or we're meeting each other. Sometimes they'll ask me, why is it that you are criticizing the Democratic Party so much? When I'm in conversations with them. And the reason why I put some examples here is so that people can actually get like tangible proof as to why. There is a, I will just talk about Bernie Sanders later. I just want to say that I wrote some things down for, there was by the Democratic Party campaign, there was a Bernie Sanders attack ad, which was the first openly anti-Bernie Sanders attack, which was airing across Iowa, thanks to a $680,000 ad buy from the PAC arm of the Democratic Majority for Israel, a group founded to counter what it seems as the Democratic Party's growing skepticism about the Israeli government. There was that ad. There was as well the app, which I'm going to quote from a Intercept piece, The Intercept. There's a person within the company culture of Shadow that I'm talking about. The Shadow was the one that was the company for this app. There was a person with knowledge of the company's culture of Shadow, the app creator, who asked to remain anonymous for fear of reprisal, shared communication showing that top officials at the company regularly express hostility towards Senator Bernie Sanders supporters. McGowan, all right, is a figure that you have to pay attention to. McGowan is married to Michael Halley, and McGowan is the head of Acronym, which owns Shadow. And McGowan, Tara McGowan, is married to Michael Halley, or Hale, however you say it, H-A-L-L-E. Mm. And it's a senior strategist for the Buttigieg campaign. And this is the tie between the app and the Buttigieg campaign. They're already two of the proof, I think, that would prove for anyone. And then there was a third, which is there was a Black Hawk County in Iowa, which had done their result counts, send it to the Democratic Party, and the chair, Chris Schawitz, who reported the results of their caucus, had reported it to the Democratic Party, and the Democratic Party gave the delegates of that county to the former governor of Massachusetts, which is Patrick. So you have here, I will just look at this, you have here Black Hawk County caucus results, Sanders 2,149 votes, that's 155 county delegate. Buttigieg, 1,578 votes, that's 111 county delegates. So it's like 44 county delegate lead for Sanders. And here Chris Schawitz gave them early to the Democratic Party. And what happened? He could not get through after he saw the results posted by the Iowa Democratic Party that Black Hawk County was not included in those results. And he had to himself posted on Twitter by his partner to give the results of his county, which is one of the most diverse counties in Iowa. And here is the chair of the Black Hawk County Board of Supervisors, also the state co-chair for Bernie 2020 and director of Americans for Democratic Action, trying to get through, and they would not post it. They would not post the results from Black Hawk County. These are three. I'm just giving three examples. I'm just trying to give people, for folks especially who talk to me and start debates with me outside of this episode and ask me, why am I criticizing the Democratic Party when I should be criticizing the Republican Party? I'm not going to criticize the Republican Party. I'm criticizing the Democratic Party because there is strong corruption within this establishment. And I think people need to start understanding this. And especially since this is the year of the 2020 elections, that we need to start mobilizing against the Democratic Party. And I think that really the people who consider themselves to be on the left need to start getting on board with that. And that's really why I decided to bring out these three examples as to why I'm so much more convinced that I'm no longer ever just going to sign up for any Democratic Party just for this once. Or no, the Democratic Party is not. It's like Julian Assange had said, that's like asking between Republican and Democrats from gonorrhea or
syphilis.
Syphilis. Yeah. So that's what I wanted to point out for some of the listeners. If they're tuning in, and happened to me, some of my friends, because I know that they've subscribed recently.
Right. Well, and the things that we're seeing here are not are on a much bigger scale than this, but are not unlike what we what we hear about in corrupt union elections. And what is the way that a union members have to respond when they have a corrupt union leadership that's basically putting people at positions of president or vice president and, you know, stuffing ballots and all that kind of stuff? What has to happen in order for that to be overturned is generally, like, overturned in a way that will benefit the rank and file, is workers need to go, like, to those, they start demonstrating, they go to those offices, they shut those places down, they just get in the way, they start gumming up the works with their own activity. And this is what Bernie Sanders and the Democratic Socialists of America are talking about. They say they're building a movement. They say they're building a movement to oppose the establishment, to oppose ultimately capitalism. I think they're saying that they should be. But one of the things that exposes that they're not is the fact that when this stuff went down, this is when you mobilize. This is when you get all the people who were knocking doors on Iowa and mobilize and go to the various centers and make trouble and basically make it and expose these things through street actions or shutting down. Go to the DNC. We're in Iowa and protest and ask that Troy Price, who he actually, that Troy Price guy who has been heading it up in Iowa, mm-hmm. he actually finally resigned because it looked like he actually was seen to have ties to Buttigieg and Shadow and the DNC itself and stuff like that. So it's that is what it would look like. A candidate who is planning on building a movement beyond the election would be mobilizing that movement right now. And if you're not going to mobilize it now, then you have no intention or no ability to mobilize it after this. And the real story about these elections is the same story for all elections, the corruption's being exposed, but at the same time, as workers, we are asked to be, viewers of this, sort of like where we watch this like a tennis match, you know, the ball going back and forth. We're not asked to actually enter into this electoral system except to do one thing, cast a vote. And then from there, that's done. From then on in, we're just observers. This in some ways gets to, does voting matter? And one, I think this thing exposes that voting is corrupt and is a criminal enterprise under capitalism. There's nothing really truthful to it. And the minute there's anything truthful in it that might threaten the system will find a way of undoing it because we're not really able to elect the people we want. And that's not what our electoral system is there to fool us into believing we have say in a system where we have absolutely no say. And I believe that this is, that what we are seeing here in Iowa and what we will see through, I think, through this primary season and even into the general election is going to prove again that there is no way for us to engage our electoral system and change it. We are going to have to do some things well outside of that in order to enact outside of and independent of this election cycle in order to make change. But it also shows the power of the elections to get everyone to pay attention to this and to make politics. It even happened for me. It's happening right now. Look what we're doing in this episode. All our politics are becoming narrowed into watching what's happening with this candidate and that candidate, who's winning this, who's got these numbers. And once we start playing that game, we're playing their game, not ours.
And I think I'd like to share my thoughts on Bernie Sanders after this break. So I want to have us go in that direction. I think what you were alluding to in the last, before the break, you were saying something about how we need to move away from, why don't you say it so I can sort of pick up the thread from there? Because I wanted to say something to it. And...
Right. Well, number one is let's not be fooled to think that Sanders is actually building something other than the same old, same old. He's not building a movement that's going to fight the establishment. He's not fighting the establishment right now. And if you're not fighting the establishment right now, then you have no intention of fighting them later. And secondly, the real, I think one of the major things this exposes is the game or trick of the elections that capitalism plays on all of us workers. And it gives us the illusion of choice. It gives us the illusion of some ability to make decisions, or to, like, even in some small way, affect the levers of power some way, or at least hold them back. And what you see at a time like this, this is nothing new. This is not actually Democratic Party corruption, what we're seeing in Iowa. This is the Democratic establishment exposed for what it's always been, which is completely a completely moneyed interest built on affirming its own demands and affirming the demands of the wealthy who fund it. And that is what it has always been and what it will always be. That's what it means to say the Democratic Party is a capitalist party. So these elections show us how we sort of get inoculated and almost like a morphine running through our system as we become observers of politics taking place in front of us with the illusion that we're actually being asked to participate. And so voting is not just it doesn't do anything. It actually kind of fools you into believing that you're having some kind of say in your system. And the real liberation will come from us when we recognize that this voting system under democracy in this country has nothing to do with liberty, has nothing to do with any sort of expression of what we want. That will only come through class struggle, through strikes, through actions that we take on our own and in our own way. It won't look, we'll have our own elections, we'll have our own workers' councils, well, things like that, but we won't gain anything by elections that run through establishing what person gets put up there in the capitalist state.
Right, and I'm going to speak a little bit to Bernie Sanders' character, which I'm just disappointed in. And that is that I feel as if he is leading us into this catastrophe, because he will eventually, if he doesn't win or does win, he'll eventually, if he wins, he'll only be the president for 4 years. And if he doesn't win, he'll have recruited tons of his supporters into the Democratic Party. So either way, if he wins or he does not win, we have to buy into the Democratic establishment, because he is asking his supporters to vote for the nominee that, if he loses, he will support. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he has already stated that he is going to endorse whoever the eventual Democratic Party nominee might be. And I think that is part of the reason why the Democratic Party establishment is sort of going to use Bernie Sanders and undermine his candidacy so that they can try to then recruit those Bernie Sanders supporters that they don't have access to, because he is a populist candidate.
Right.
And they could either lose them to Trump. And so I suppose that they're trying to recruit and trying to maintain Bernie Sanders a little bit there, just enough so that they can eventually boot him out. We have to remember, there are rules within the DNC. If the superdelegate rules are not going to be able to get Bernie Sanders out of being the top candidate, did you know that the DNC have this nuclear, I will call, nuclear option to decide, which isn't, who is the DNC chair?
Tom Perez. Yeah.
It is. Who can decide, you know what, we're going to actually replace you, we're not going to endorse you, we're going to pick out someone else. Mm-hmm. They actually can do this. I was looking into, and I will link to a YouTube video of this person. I think it's something redacted, something YouTuber with the channel Redacted.
Oh, that's with the RT. That's Russia Times.
No. This is not RT. I sent you the link on your text. And I know RT quite well. They have that green logo. This is not it. This is for sure not it. Anyhow, the point is that that this YouTuber was talking about how they're just completely going to undermine Bernie Sanders. And shout out to that YouTuber. I apologize that I don't remember your name. And maybe we'll get connected sometime in the future. Who knows? But the point is, I'll link to his YouTube channel and his video, where this nuclear option is possible for Bernie Sanders. It'll just take him out. That's what Bernie Sanders is, how do you call it, playing with. This is leading his supporters, like myself, that supported him in 2016, to align with the Democratic Party, giving the Democratic Party more power, and ultimately that will make this huge disillusionment, I can see, especially for the youth, where this untapped energy could actually be used for something greater, and will instead create this big apathy, this great apathy, the sentiment of feeling cheated. And I'm really feeling something around that, because I know what that's like, having been through my own political journey. And so I just want to say that this is really disappointing for time, for especially a lot of young voters, and who trust in Bernie Sanders. And Bernie Sanders is asking us to trust in the Democratic Party, which is undermining him.
Correct.
So anyhow, it's just clear that the peace and solidarity movement is not the goals of the Democratic Party. They really have no interest in class culture and there's just, well, class, but for the wealthy class, and or any real genuine interest in social movement of resistance. And like I said and pointed out, the examples for my friends really who are going to listen to this, there is plenty of evidence, and there are more. I just mentioned three earlier, where you can clearly see that this system is really meant to keep two powers in place, and that is the Republicans, which I'm not going to talk about in this episode today, and the Democrats. And the Democrats are there undermining to keep, really, who everyone thinks they're trying to get away from, Trump, to keep Trump. So if you're voting for Democratic Party, and, well, I don't know if I want to say that, but you're essentially now, I think, voting for Trump. I don't know.
Yes, that is the reality.
So anyhow, that's what I wanted to say, the piece on Bernie Sanders. Did you want to add something to it, or did you want to say your own take or your own perspective?
Well, I'm not voting for, I'm not going to vote for Bernie Sanders either. I just think people should consider, like, how we spent the last 3 years talking about Russia, talking about election meddling, talking about this, and then suddenly you have a completely obvious case of it. And then suddenly the same people who were so upset about Russia, who were willing to empower the CIA, who were willing to empower the FBI, who were willing to create all sorts of fake news powers for Google and Facebook, that where they could eliminate right-wing and left-wing voices through this, now suddenly they're silent. And it just shows the fact that the liberal cause is a reformist cause, and the liberal cause is a capitalist cause. The liberal cause is a cause for empowering the state and not exposing it. And the liberal cause is one that essentially allows the capitalist class to go along with all sorts of criminality, as long as somehow liberals feel like this somehow helps them. And so I'm not a liberal, and if you want real change, you shouldn't be a liberal. You need to become a revolutionary. And the fact is, in order to make change here, we have to go completely outside of this game that we are all being transfixed by, which is called the Democratic primaries, the Republican. Well, that I don't think there are going to be any sort of surprises there. But look, we fell for it ourselves. Like, when we did our prediction thing, we spent a lot of time kind of talking about the elections, and it's really hard in the absence of class struggle to see any way out. But that's what we have to look for. We have to look for a way outside of this electoral box and turn the game into something where we as a class set the terms of what's taking place, set the pace of what issues are supposed to be discussed and not discussed. And until we do that, we're going to be caught in this trap, I think. Electoral trap, capitalist trap, whatever you want to call it. The trap of the state. There's nothing there for us other than the role of observer. and then being told sweet lies about how our vote actually matters.
You mentioned that our episode on the predictions of 2020, yeah. And I think our listeners and viewers should be, there'll be a link below where Andy will place for people to visit that. And I had mentioned in that episode that that I thought Joe Biden would actually be the front runner.
Yeah.
And
the likely primary winner kind of thing.
And I've been surprised, but I guess I shouldn't have been surprised that that Bernie Sanders, as you had predicted actually, would rise in not just the polls like some guessing game, but actually in the election results.
Right.
And now Nevada is coming up and we'll see where that goes.
And interestingly enough, while me, you and Kenny were sitting here, we had our guest over here who was sitting here, you know, our friend Hema. And what was her prediction?
Our other co-host behind
us. What was her prediction of who was going to win? Although she wasn't willing to put it on camera.
The primary?
Yeah, the Democratic primary. Do you remember?
I forgot.
She predicted Bloomberg.
Oh,
which is very interesting, because if there's anyone who can sneak his way out of here through a combination of using all his... He's already put $250 million into the election. He's buying Instagram influencers to put forward memes for his candidacy. He's already nationally polling 15%. He came from 0 to 15%. So he's behind Sanders and Biden in terms of the national poll. So she might have been right. And that will all come down later when we look at how the convention happens. Will it be a brokered convention? Will there be somebody who doesn't have enough? And some of the stuff you're talking about, which is seems like it should be illegal, but they're going to go ahead and do it, where they can actually anoint a candidate if under the right circumstances. So it'll be interesting, because Bloomberg is kind of emerging as a person
and
who might
just... He is a flip-flopper himself.
Yeah.
Republican, then Democrats, essentially the same. And then talking about, with the recent audio clip that was released about him, talking about how mostly it's minorities and
right.
stereotyping for stop and frisk policies
right.
that he implemented in New York. And now he said that he didn't want to go on an apologetic tour, and now he is doing just that.
Yeah.
Anyhow.
Well, and look at the DNC. The DNC whose raison d'etre has been anyone but Trump. We've got to get that crooked, racist, sexist billionaire out of there. So what are they going to do? They're going
replace,
to replace it with another New York billionaire.
Racist billionaire.
So it's like, I agree with you. I think people should, this thing where you said, look, voting Democrat means voting Trump. That's what we're coming up to against here, folks. That's what's being revealed, is voting for the Democrats means voting for Trump.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. So.
Well, I hope this episode proved to be somewhat substantial enough for
yeah.
people to start realizing that they need to change their affiliation.
And we need to start looking to ourselves and not as getting drawn into these elections. The fact is, though, is we're going to do future episodes about these elections.
Right.
You know, the real action is what's going on in France. And those sorts of things aren't taking place right now. In fact, the culinary union in Las Vegas is right now being mobilized to fight a program, to fight a healthcare for all bid that Bernie Sanders is making. So it's just cynicism after cynicism, and the working class in this country finds itself very much captured in the thrall of these elections and of the two mainstream parties. And unless that breaks, we're going to have a very tough road ahead.
The Democratic Party really is interested in keeping their supporters and also making it hard. Like in California, you have to change, if you're an independent, to a Democratic for the primary. You have to change your preference.
Yeah.
Anyhow, we can go on.
Yeah.
But let's cut it short here.
Yep.
I think this was good. And I'm so happy you're back.
Yeah, it's good to be back.
And better.
Getting better.
Andy, your partner, Brandy, Andy sounds similar. Andy,
yeah.
Brandy. Brandy, your partner, took very well care of you.
She did.
Loves you very much.
She did. And I thank her very much. And we both had a giant loss when we lost our Naboo. There's not much to say about it other than it's
Naboo is your dog.
Yeah.
So or her dog. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just a little, it's kind of heartbreaking. So.
Yeah. Well, my condolences to you, and to Brandy. Mm-hmm. And I hope Brandy hears this. And we will catch up with everyone. And hopefully Kenny Cepeda will join us next week. And we hope that he is well.
Do we know what we're doing next week?
Yeah, what are we doing next week? I think we're, can we talk about coronavirus?
Maybe so. We'll see. Yeah.
Please check us out on any of our 5 platforms on BitChute, Google Play, Stitcher, iTunes Podcasts, and YouTube. You can subscribe, rate, review, and best of all, share with your family and community, and catch us all next week.
All right. Ciao. Take care.